So a remark about a question that was asked yesterday about relativistic effects. In general, in condensed matter, the Fermi velocities are quite small when compared to speed of light. So typically, you will find that it's 10 to the power 5 or 6 meters per second. So you can typically ignore all relativistic effects. So most of the times, in condensed matter, you'll be dealing with non-relativistic field theory. Now, one material where you do see some relativistic effects is graphene. And the reason is that the dispersion relation, as you saw in the tutorial, is linear. That means if you calculate the velocity at any point in k, so E as a function of k is linear, so that means dE over dk is just constant. So it is a relativistic theory for electrons in graphene, the one that you have to use. But the speed of light there is replaced by Fermi velocity. So the point when we say that you should use relativistic theory, that means you should use relativistic theory for low energy description of graphene, where the Fermi velocity is still, it's much smaller than speed of light, but it's just constant. So velocity that the system is able to access, the velocity regime, is just constant. So the goal of this lecture and tomorrow is to understand quantum Hall effect and fractional quantum Hall effect. So this is experimental data that you've seen. You have a sheet with you. What is observed is that Hall resistance is quantized. There are many plateaus, and the values of these plateaus are either given by an integer in the denominator or a fraction. So this is in units of h by e square. This is 1/3, and so on. Any questions so far? So think of the resistance, this RH, as H over F e square. So if F is 1/3, the resistance is really 3 times H by e square. And all the integer values of this F are all here. So our goal is to understand all of these plateaus and explain why the longitudinal resistance also vanishes at these plateaus. So what we really want to do is to treat the problem of two-dimensional electron gas in a perpendicular magnetic field, quantum mechanically, calculate the ground state of the system, and then see what will happen if you apply a current through the system. So what you really do in this experiment is you apply an external current and you measure conductance. So let's try to calculate. We'll first write down the ground state of the system, and then we'll try to discuss or try to calculate the conductance. And we'll show that the system, indeed, you can explain most of these plateaus. So I'm going to start by writing down a general Hamiltonian. Right now, this is non-interacting. It's a two-dimensional electron gas. So what we have is kinetic energy, p squared over 2m. In the presence of magnetic field, there is some vector potential, and we use minimal coupling to replace p by p plus ea. So the charge of electron is minus e. So at the moment, we are also ignoring spin of the electrons. So we are only discussing the orbital effects. So this is the Hamiltonian we are interested in. The vector potential, you can choose any gauge. The vector potential is simply defined as the curl of A is the magnetic field. And this magnetic field, we choose it to be in z direction. So for a given value of external field, you can choose any A. In fact, you know the gauge invariance. If you change A by gradient of a function, you will still get the same magnetic field. So another way you can think of gauge invariance is that the Schrödinger equation is gauge invariant. So if you do this gauge transformation for this Hamiltonian, you should, if you write down the Schrodinger equation, the Schrodinger equation should be gauge invariant. So if you change the vector potential, this, the wave functions, so let's do in position space. So we are talking about the wave functions. The wave functions would transform as a phase factor. So in general, if you calculate expectation value of any observable, it's gauge invariant. But the wave functions themselves do depend on the choice of gauge. So the reason I want to stress on this is you will see this, there are many popular choices of gauge that people make when they talk about this problem. And typically you use the gauge that is most convenient. So the gauge we will choose is what is called symmetric gauge. If you're only interested in discussing the non-interacting problem, the simplest gauge is the Landau gauge. So you will see discussion of quantum Hall effect, integer quantum Hall effect being done in Landau gauge in many textbooks. But what we are going to do is we are going to discuss this in symmetric gauge because that is the convenient gauge when you want to talk about interactions, or when you want to extend this to include electron-electron interactions and talk about fractional quantum Hall effect. So what we are going to do is choose what is called symmetric gauge. And in symmetric gauge, you will write down the vector potential as half B cross R. You can write this as P over 2 minus y x 0. So it's simply the minus y coordinate in x direction and x coordinate in y direction. With this symmetric gauge, with this choice of gauge, you can write down the Hamiltonian, and this will now look like this. So now I'm going to write down the x term and the y term separately. Next, we can define a very useful quantity, which is called magnetic length. And this is the physical length scale of the problem. So we define magnetic length L as square root of H bar divided by E times B. And what we are going to do is we are going to measure all lengths, all the coordinates in terms of this magnetic length, and all the energies in terms of cyclotron frequency. Which is defined as E times B over M. So what we really want to do is to go in dimensionless coordinates. And in these coordinates, by measuring energy in cyclotron frequency and length in magnetic length, you can write down this Hamiltonian as half minus I del over del x. So when you do the first step, you will get h bar omega c here. And then when you measure all energies in h bar omega c, you just get this. So when we discuss the results, we'll put all the dimensions back. Any questions so far? Now it turns out that this problem, it becomes more convenient to discuss this in the complex plane. So next, what we are going to do is write down this Hamiltonian. So it's in the XY plane. But now we are going to the complex plane. And we will use this unusual choice where we'll define the complex number z as x minus iy. In polar coordinates is r e to the power minus I theta. And the conjugate as x plus iy. The reason we do this, make this choice for z rather than the usual x plus iy, is that later on when we find the wave functions, we'll find out that the wave functions depend crucially on what is called Landau level index. For the zeroth Landau level, if you make this choice, the wave functions will only involve the coordinates and not the conjugate. So we will see this in 10, 15 minutes. So for the moment, remember that z is x minus iy and z bar, the conjugate, is x plus iy. Now you can transform the derivatives, del over del x. This will be given as del over del z plus del over del z bar. And you can find out what del y is, del over del y. This is minus I times partial derivative with respect to the coordinate minus the partial derivative with respect to the conjugate. So now you can put all of this back. And in this complex plane, the Hamiltonian looks like this. So this is the Hamiltonian we wish to solve. And what we would like to do is find the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian. Now, it is very convenient to solve this Hamiltonian by defining new operators. So right now, we have just written this Hamiltonian by choosing a gauge, and we went to the complex coordinate. Next, we are going to define new operators. And these are ladder operators that will be defined as the B operator, which will be defined as 1 over square root of 2, the conjugate, the dagger of this operator is the following. Annihilation operator A. And A dagger. So I'm defining two sets of operators, B and B dagger, and A dagger. Any questions? Yes.
speed dagger is Z bar over 2 or Z over 2?
Sorry, which one?
Just see that 3 of the terms are Z bar and only one of them is Z, so I'm wondering if that's...
Okay. So, yeah, so this is Z bar. This should be conjugate. So this is just conjugate of this. This should be Z. And yes. Any other questions? So you can use these operators now to write down the Hamiltonian in terms of these operators. You can also use these definitions to calculate the commutation relation between these operators. And what we will find if you go through this calculation, so what you will find is that these are indeed bosonic operators. So these are bosonic operators that satisfy the commutation relation AA dagger is 1 and BB dagger is also 1 and all other commutators vanish. In terms of these operators, when you write down the Hamiltonian, this looks like A dagger A plus half. So the B operators don't appear in the Hamiltonian at all. And it looks like a harmonic oscillator Hamiltonian involving only A operators. So the eigenvalues of this Hamiltonian are very easy to find. They are simply n plus half, where n, so the eigenvalues are very easy to find. These are n plus half. So the energy eigenvalues are simply n plus half h bar omega c, where omega c is the cyclotron frequency. So this n is the eigenvalue of the number operator A dagger A. And this N is called Landau level index. Any questions? So far, we have, first we went to the complex plane, we chose symmetric gauge. Complex plane is more convenient to work with. And we define new operators in terms of these Z and Z bar. So in complex plane, we had the two coordinates are given by Z, the complex number and Z bar. But we note that they are defined differently. And then we defined new ladder operators, AA dagger and BB dagger. We tried to write the Hamiltonian in terms of these new operators. And what we find is that B operators don't appear at all in the Hamiltonian. What does that mean? That simply means that there might be, that is a hint that there might be a lot of degeneracy. So what B dagger will do, it will create an excitation, but it does not change the energy. So there might be infinite degeneracy for each Landau level index n. So B operators don't appear at all in the problem, in the Hamiltonian. But they do appear if you try to write down other operators. For example, if we write down the angular momentum in Z coordinate, so this is now the angular momentum operator in Z coordinate, which is simply minus I h bar del over del theta. This can be written as minus h bar this you can write again in terms of A and B operators. And this comes out to minus h bar b dagger b minus a dagger a. So the b operators, they don't appear in the Hamiltonian, but they do appear when you try to write down other operators. Now, why did I write down this operator? The reason is that this will help us in writing down these infinitely degenerate eigenstates. Look at this operator. This has number operator for b operators, b dagger b, and the number operator a dagger a. This operator commutes with the Hamiltonian. Hamiltonian does not have b at all, and it also has, they both have the number operator. So the Hamiltonian commutes with this angular momentum operator. That means you can write down simultaneous eigenstates of Hamiltonian and the angular momentum quantum number, or the angular momentum operator. So we are going to choose, choose eigenstates of angular momentum operator, and we are going to label the quantum number for the angular momentum to be m. So what we are going to say is this operator Lz this is b dagger b minus a dagger a. We are going to choose states such that this operator acting on a state that we are now labeling with n, which is the quantum number, which is the Landau level index. That is the number operator corresponding to a dagger a. And another quantum number, m, which is the angular momentum in z coordinate, which is this. If you do this, you will get m. Or you will define angular as minus m h bar. Any questions? So now you can see, so what is this? This is defined as minus m, and this is the operator. So you can see what m is really, it's the number operator, the eigenvalue of this number operator minus the eigenvalue of this number operator. Now, the eigenvalues of number operators themselves should be non-negative integers. So if you are in a given Landau level with Landau level index being n, let's ask the question, how many values of m are allowed? So you start in the Landau level index n, and in this level n, we are asking the question, how many values of m are allowed? So b dagger b, so we're starting in level n, that means the eigenvalue of a dagger a is n. B dagger b, the minimum is 0. So the values that m can take is minus n. Then b dagger b can be 1. So you have minus n plus 1. B dagger b can be 2. So you have minus n plus 2, and so on. So you can see that there are infinite values of m that are possible. And this quantum number m does not appear in the energy eigenvalues. So what we have found is that system has this, the eigenstates of the system are infinitely degenerate. For each eigenvalue n plus half, you have infinite eigenstates which are labeled by the angular momentum quantum number. Any questions? Yes.
So if m is the angular momentum quantum number for LZ, so L squared can be anything.
Yeah, yes. That's a good point, yeah.
But it can't be greater than.
So you can write down, so at the moment, the reason we are only interested in LZ is also due to physical symmetry. If you think of the material is inherently two-dimensional, and we have chosen symmetric gauge. So what we are really interested in is this motion, circular motion, in this two-dimensional plane. And that's what we will find. Also, this should, you can motivate this by thinking about the classical result. Classically, what happens to electrons in a magnetic field? They move in circles. So you do expect this to be a physically relevant operator. Any other questions? Okay, so what we have really found is we have found these eigenstates H of the Hamiltonian. And these eigenstates can be written as following. So the eigenvalues, they are simply n plus half. And the states themselves, you can think of these states nm as following, you create B dagger M plus N times. On vacuum. You can also talk about what do these operators do, A dagger and B dagger. So what will this operator A dagger do? This will increase the Landau level index by 1. And this will do, will this change value of M? Yes, because M also includes A dagger A. So you have to carefully think what these operators A dagger and B daggers do. So it's easy to see what B dagger does. B dagger increases M by 1. So M is the eigenvalue of B dagger B minus A dagger A. So what B dagger does is it just increases value of M and does nothing to N. What about A dagger? A dagger increases N by 1, and it also changes M. What does it do? If N increases by 1, M decreases by 1. So these operators are not, you have to think of them in a slightly different way. These are not the conventional. So B dagger is just like the conventional operator, but the Hamiltonian does not have B dagger in it. Action of A dagger, you should think of it as increasing N by 1, but decreasing M by 1, and that's why we have this factor of M plus N for B dagger. Any questions? So now, if I can give you the vacuum state, you can calculate all other eigenstates by using this formula. So next, our goal is to find vacuum for this Hamiltonian in this representation. So how is vacuum defined? Vacuum is defined as no excitations for, so A operator, annihilation operator A on vacuum should be zero, and B on vacuum should also be zero. So using this, you can define the vacuum state. And if you use the representation for A and B in terms of these operators, A and B. So you should also note that there is this minus sign. Whenever you take a dagger of a derivative operator, you get additional minus sign. You can show this by partial integration. So try to calculate what the dagger of an operator is, write down the scalar product, and do partial integration, and you can show that dagger of del over del z is minus del over del z bar. So use this form for A and B operators, and this as the definition of the vacuum. You can find out the ground state uniquely, and this ground state, let's write down the wave function in position representation. This ground state, we'll also call it eta, 0, 0, r is 1 over square root 2 pi e to the power minus 1 over 4 z, z bar. So the vacuum is uniquely defined. This is the vacuum. You can act with these, use this formula to create all other states. Any questions? So next, what we are going to do is we are going to talk about the infinitely degenerate lowest Landau level. So the eigenvalue of the number operator A dagger A, n is say zero. So the energy of the system is simply half h bar omega c. And we want to discuss all the eigenstates with this energy. You can write all of these eigenstates, n, zero m, by using that formula. This would be 1 over square root of 2 to the power m z by 2 minus 2 del over del z bar over m square root of m factorial, acting on 1 over square root of 2 pi . So you can calculate all eigenstates within the zeroth Landau level labeled with m, and you'll find them to be z to the power m e to the power minus z over z bar by 4 square root 2 pi 2 to the power m factorial. So if you look at this expression, you would see that all of these states only include this coordinate z, apart from this Gaussian factor, which really is just the modulus of this complex coordinate. So this is the reason we chose z and z bar in the way we define over there. So what we really have is infinite possible infinite states in the zeroth Landau level. That means no matter how many electrons you have in your system, there will be enough states within the zeroth Landau level that can be occupied. But the reason this is not true is because essentially we always have a finite system. So we do get infinite degeneracy for an infinite system. So next, what our goal is to estimate what is the degeneracy for a finite system. So within zeroth Landau level, you have many single particle states. If you have total n electrons, what you want to find out is whether, depending on system size, how many of these levels are filled. Any questions? So if you try to look at this, if you try to plot this in as a function of z and z bar, you'd see what this factor is. It's a Gaussian peak at zero, at origin. And what this is a polynomial z to the power m. So if you plot this, what you will have is, so let's say this is z bar, and I'm plotting eta 0m. What you will see is something like this. So this is a plot for this wave function. So this is a Gaussian peak, this is a polynomial. So if you make a plot in general, it will have a maxima somewhere and it will be decaying on both sides of the maxima. And this is symmetric, this peak will be symmetric. So one way we can estimate how many states are there in this state is to calculate what this peak is, where this peak is, and set the limit and find out how many states are there such that the peak of the wave function is within the system. If this peak of the wave function lies outside the system, so let's consider our system to be a disk of radius r. So now I'm looking at only the zz bar coordinate. If the peak of the wave function is inside, I count that as a state, as an allowed state that an electron can occupy. But if the peak is outside the disk R, outside our system, then outside our system is just vacuum. By definition, there are no particles, so the electron cannot occupy that state. So to estimate the degeneracy, all I have to do is find out where this wave function is maximum. So you can do this by setting del over del z. To be zero. And when you do this, you'll find that what you find is z, the equation you have is z to the power m minus 1, 4m minus zz bar, and the Gaussian factor is zero. This implies that the peak of the wave function is for mod z square equal to 4m. I'm now putting the dimensions back. All coordinates are measured in magnetic length. So this is where the wave function is maximum. Any questions? So now all you have to do is you have to set this value of coordinate to the radius of the system, and that will give you how many values of m are allowed. So let's do that. So what we find is 2 square root m l. This equal to r. This gives us an estimate of how many values of m are allowed. So we find that m is r square divided by 4 l square. Any questions?
Why does the peak have to be inside the?
So this is just a way to estimate. So if the peak is outside, that means the maximum probability for the electron is outside the disk, and outside the disk is really a vacuum. So by definition, there are no electrons. So we really have a two-dimensional electron gas in vacuum.
Sorry.
Yes.
That m we calculated, you said the greatest m we can have?
Yes, exactly. So m can be 0, 1, or actually it can be also negative. So you start with the minus n, but if we are doing it for the 0th Landau level, so n is really 0. So we start with 0 for the 0th Landau level. And then you can be 0, 1, 2, 3, till this value of m. So this is really the number of states available for occupation in the 0th Landau level. Next, what we are going to do is define a very important quantity called the filling factor, which is defined as how many of these states can be filled. So let's define a quantity nu, and this is the filling factor, which is defined as density of electrons divided by the total maximum number of states that can be occupied. Now, the density of electrons also has a factor of 2 for spin. So one way to accommodate that factor of 2 for spin, so we don't want to include spin in our problem. So what we are going to do is we are only going to take half of this number and discuss what happens. So the maximum what we will do here, what we'll put in the denominator is half of this, because we know that we do have spin, so the total electronic density, so the total number of states, so the maximum will be half of this, which would mean that you have occupied all of it. Does that make sense? So the electrons have spin half, and so far we have not included the spin. So how many electrons can occupy these states? Half of them, if you don't include spin, because for each electron, you actually have 2 possible states, so up electron and down electron. So in this electronic density, if I don't include spin in the maximum, I should take half of this number. So I'm going to write it down as rho electron times all the allowed values of m divided by the pi r square. And for m, the maximum value, I will take half of this. And I can write this as 2 pi l square rho electron. Now this can also be written as rho electron 2 pi h bar over Eb. Now this quantity, we are going to call it rho b, which itself is defined as b divided by h by e . So we're defining a lot of new quantities, and they all have some physical meaning. So this quantity h by e is, we are calling it phi naught, which is one flux quantum. So it is one magnetic flux quantum. And what this rho b is the magnetic flux density. It measures how many flux quantums are there in the external magnetic field. So you can think of the magnetic field that you have applied in this 2-deck, that you have applied in your system, as being composed of many flux quantas. Each flux quanta is h bar over e. So what rho b is a measure of how many flux quanta are there in your magnetic field. So this is called as magnetic flux density. So this filling factor is simply, you can write this as rho electron divided by rho b. Any questions so far? Now, what this means is, now imagine the case in general, you may have number of electrons such that, so the electronic density you can also tune in some systems, but the 2-deck you will start with some number of electrons. What you can change is magnetic field. The important thing to remember here is that this rho b does depend on magnetic field. So if you look at this m, also the degeneracy depends on magnetic field. So what is L? Go back to the definition of magnetic length. It is h bar, square root h bar over Eb. So if I increase magnetic field, I increase the degeneracy of this finite system. So if you say you are at a very large magnetic field, that means the degeneracy of the zeroth Landau level is finite, but still very large. If the number of electrons is smaller than this, that means the lowest Landau level is only going to be partially filled. Is that clear? Now, if you have a partially filled Landau level, there are simply many ways you can arrange n electrons. So this we are calling filling factor, and we are discussing the case when filling factor is less than 1. So when is this filling factor 1? If nu equal to 1, that means for each electron, you have one flux quantum. So nu equal to 1 implies each electron or one electron per flux quantum. But you can also have a case where number of electrons is smaller than the total number of flux quantum, depending on the value of the magnetic field. And this is called partial filling. This is when the lowest Landau level has more state than the number of electrons. And if you want to choose n, so let's say the total number of electrons, is capital N. If you want to choose N values out of total available states, which is R square divided by 2L square, you will have this binomial coefficient. So if you have N electrons, which is smaller than the total possible values of M, now I put a factor of 2 to take into account the spin, then this is how many ways you can choose n states out of the total possible states. And in general, this number will be very large if you're dealing with large numbers. So if you have a partially filled Landau level, the ground state will have very high degeneracy. So you should keep in mind that the ground state for a partially filled Landau level is not unique. In fact, it is highly degenerate. There is one case when the ground state is going to be unique. That is, if you are at nu equal to 1. If the number of electrons is exactly equal. So next, we are going to consider the number of electrons is exactly equal to number of flux quanta. So for nu less than 1, the ground state is not unique. There are simply too many ways to take n states out of the total available. But for nu equal to 1, this state is unique. Now you can write this state or the ground state of the system corresponding to nu equal to 1. What does that mean? Ground state corresponding to nu equal to 1. That means ground state corresponding to a given, so for every system size, the ground state for nu equal to 1 will correspond to a particular value of magnetic field, such that you have one flux per electron, one flux quantum per electron. And you can write this state by using a Slater determinant. So you know, so next I'm simply going to write down the wave function for, so now I'm going to write down a many body wave function. And again, I will use the notation we developed in the first two lectures. So I'm going to write down the wave function that automatically includes the exchange symmetry. So I can use Slater determinant for this purpose, and this wave function can be written as follows. So eta 0, 0, z1, the coordinates of these capital N electrons are denoted by z1, z2, and so on. Any questions so far? So what I have written down is many body ground state describing a non-interacting system at a given value of magnetic field, which corresponds to nu equal to 1. Now, these wave functions, we have a form for them. These are simply given by this. So all of these wave functions have a Gaussian factor and the coordinate z. So if you use that expression, you can write down this wave function. So now I'm going to, I don't want to write down all the normalization factors. So I'm just going to write down the determinant, 1, z1, z1 square, and so on. And there will be an exponential, and this exponential is sum over I from 1 to n mod zi square. By 4. So that exponential outside the determinant comes from this. Each term in this determinant. So this determinant has how many terms? Capital N factorial. And this is what we did in the first lecture. And each term is a product of single particle wave functions. And each single particle wave function has that Gaussian factor. So in each of the terms in this determinant, you will get a Gaussian factor that corresponds to summing over mod z square for all n, and this 4. So this Gaussian factor is going to be irrelevant for us, but keep in mind that it is coming from Gaussian factors for all of these wave functions. What this determinant is, we know already properties of this determinant. It's known in mathematics. This is called van der Mond determinant. In the tutorial today, you would show some properties of this van der Mond determinant. What you will show is that this determinant can be written as product j less than k zj minus zk, where j and k are integers. And this, so you'll show this in the tutorial. So now we are only talking about this determinant here. We took out all the Gaussian factors, and there's also some normalization constants. Now, what kind of terms are there in this van der Mond determinant? You can see, so this is what you will show in the tutorial. If your k is, say, 1, then there is no possible value of j. If k is 2, there is one possible value. If k is 3, then so on. So if you think about what terms are allowed here, you will find out that this determinant consists of terms like z1 minus z2, z1 minus z3, z2 minus z3, z1 minus z4, z2 minus z4, and so on. So if k is 2, then you have a term z1 minus z2, or you will have, if k is 3, you'll have z1 minus z3, z2 minus z3, and then you have to stop there. if k is 4, z1 minus z4, z2 minus z4, z3 minus z4, and so on. So just to gain an insight into what this determinant really is it has factors like this. Now, the reason we are talking about this is the following. So this wave function is sometimes also called wave function that has no wasted zeros. So what we want to show is, what we want to discuss are the Pauli correlations that are encoded in that determinant. So if you think of that determinant as a function of z1, so think of that van der Mond determinant as a function of z1. So as a function of z1, you will have terms like z1 minus z2, z1 minus z3, and so on. You will have many other terms that would be like z2 minus z3 and many other terms, but they are not dependent on z1. All the terms that depend on z1, on the coordinate 1, of the first electron will be the following: z1 minus z2, z1 minus z3, till z1 minus zn. All other terms do not depend on z1. So if you think of this as a polynomial, as a function of z1, this is a polynomial of order n minus 1. Right? So this has n minus 1 zeros. This polynomial has n minus 1 zeros. That is the order. Now, where are the zeros of this polynomial? The zeros are at z1 equal to z2, z1 equal to z3, z1 equal to z4, and so on. So the zeros of the polynomial are precisely at the coordinates of all other n minus 1 electrons. And this is what you should write if you want to include all Pauli correlations, which says that two electrons cannot be at the same point. So if you have capital N electrons, one electron, if you talk about one electron, this can be anywhere but the location of other n minus 1 electrons. So there should be zeros in the wave function corresponding to this. And this wave function has all the zeros precisely where they should be. And that's why we sometimes call this as wave function that has no wasted zeros. And the reason is, when we go to the case that includes electron-electron interactions, this factor is going to play an important role, because we want to write down the wave function for the fractional quantum Hall state also in the form that includes all the Pauli correlations. So we would try to construct a wave function that has no wasted zeros. Any questions so far? So now what we have is the ground state. We have the wave function of the system. We started with that simple Hamiltonian, and we talked about an n-electron, a many-body wave function for a non-interacting system. And this wave function at the filling factor 1, we can write down this wave function, and we can describe the ground state of the system. In the same way, you can also describe, by writing down Slater determinant, you can also write down the ground state of nu equal to 2, for example, where if you have twice the number of electrons, then n equal to 1 is no longer sufficient. You will have to take states from the higher Landau level. So each Landau level has certain number of states. If the number of electrons is more than that states, then you have to go to the next Landau level. You can consider the case where the wave function is unique. If two Landau levels are fully filled, that wave function will be unique, and you can write down that wave function. So what I'm trying to convince you is the following. If the wave function is unique, you can write it down. And this is what we are going to use when we are going to include the interactions. The problem is going to be very hard. We're going to simplify the problem and construct a case where the ground state is unique. And when the ground state is unique, we have a way of writing it down. Any questions so far? So this is how we can write down the ground state for filling factors 1, 2, and so on, all integer values. What that does is it explains all values of the Hall resistance corresponding to 1, 2, 3, 4. All of that is less than 10 Tesla in that graph. So you can describe the state of the system for these, at these plateaus. We have still not described why we get plateaus, because all we are doing is we are describing the system by writing down its wave function. We still have to calculate what should be the value of conductance, what really contributes to transport. If you apply a current, then you can think of this as a perturbation to the system. So how would the system respond? We still have to do that. But what we have is a formalism to describe the ground state at those plateaus, corresponding to those filling factors. However, this does not work if you have fractional filling. Now let's take the case when you have H F E square, where F is 1/3. In this case, the number of electrons is smaller than the degeneracy of the lowest Landau level. In particular, you have 3 times the number of flux quanta than the number of electrons. So this is the special value of F equal to 1/3. Now, there are many other plateaus corresponding to fractional values, and all of them, you can develop a theory for each one of them based on the analysis that we are going to do. But keep in mind that each of these plateaus for various different fractions, they are described by a different ground state. So they are inherently distinct phases of this 2-deck in external magnetic field corresponding to each value of B. So they're distinct phases, but they all have same symmetry. So what we would like to do is try to write down the wave function in this case. Now, what is really important when you have partial filling, a case like this, is that the role of electron-electron correlations becomes important. So you have lower electron density than the number of flux particles. In this case, the electron-electron interactions play an important role. So what we would like to do is we would like to minimize the Coulomb interaction energy to find the ground state in this case. So the problem is in general hard. If you write down the Hamiltonian, it won't be just that term, but now you will have 2 particle terms in it. And one way to solve this problem is to do something in SPIRIT which is very similar to what we did in BCS theory. So we do a variational calculation. We try to write down ground state of the system that corresponds to this plateau with some variational parameters, And then we try to minimize the Hamiltonian that includes two particle interactions and find out the value of the variational parameter. Any questions so far? So what we are going to do is what Laughlin did in early 80s. So he tried to explain why there is a plateau at F equal to 1/3, or his what he wanted to do is to write down the wave function corresponding to this partial filling. So he wrote down a variational wave function. Now we are calling this phi L. L for Laughlin. And he wrote down this wave function. So if you compare this wave function with the wave function of fully filled lowest Landau level, you will see that m is equal to 1 corresponding to that case. The Gaussian factor is the same. There will be some normalization factor. So what we are going to discuss is up to some irrelevant normalization factor. So this wave function has one variational parameter, that is m. So what he did is he used this wave function, and then he tried to do the variational calculation. Then you write down the full Hamiltonian that includes the two-body Coulomb interactions, and that also includes a uniform positive charge density. What that means is you have two-dimensional electron gas, electrons that can move in two dimensions, but you also have uniform positive charge that comes from the ions. So let's ignore any motion, any dynamics of the ions. So in the first week, we wrote down a big Hamiltonian that describes the system. There were many terms. So you suppress a lot of those terms, think that ions cannot move, suppress ion-ion electron interactions also, and write down a simpler Hamiltonian that includes that form, the non-interacting coupled electrons coupled to the vector potential. And on top of that, it includes electron-electron interaction. So you assume, for this calculation, we assume that the relevant piece of the Hamiltonian for this phenomena is the electron-electron interactions. And then again, we are going to do what we did for BCS, the variational calculation, put this wave function in, and minimize the ground state energy. And when you do this calculation, you find that m is equal to 1/3. So in this way, you can write down the wave function for fractional states. So you start. So first we build our intuition how to write these wave functions, starting with a very simple Hamiltonian and considering a very simple case. We can write it down using Slater determinants. And then we use that form of wave function and try to write down the ground state for a case that includes interactions. And we did that by putting in a variational parameter and minimizing the total energy. And in this way, you can write down the ground state for the fraction 1/3. Later on, a more general analysis showed that the Coulomb correlation energy, it has many minimas, not just at m equal to 1/3. So a more general analysis showed that actually that if you minimize the Hamiltonian, you get many other values where the energy is minimum. And those other fractions include all of those other fractions that we see. So this Laughlin, using these Laughlin-type wave functions, which are written in this form, you can explain a lot of those fractions. So you can explain many fractions. So on. One thing you note is that all of these fractions have odd denominator. Actually, let me So the notation we used is new. So when you do the variational calculation, so there are two ways you will see this in literature. Some people define the variable as m, and some people will define the variable as nu. If you define the variable as nu, then you get 1/3. And if you define the variable as m and minimize the energy, you will actually find m equal to 3. So m equal to 3 corresponds to filling factor 1/3.
Is the power there really m and not?
Yeah. So yeah. So you have to be careful. So one way to think of this is this factor, which is a polynomial, zi minus zj. This does not have a branch cut. If you have a square root here, this is not. This will have a branch cut in the complex plane. So we should really think of this as a polynomial of order higher than one. And the reason I guessed my mistake was because what we are going to do next is we are going to discuss properties of this factor and try to see Pauli's exclusion principle in this factor. So for that, we are going to show that this m is an odd integer. This can only be, so what is m equal to 1 correspond to? That corresponds to the fully filled Landau level, 1. The other values that m can take are 3, 5, and so on. But it's in general, it should be odd. One way to see this, so correct this mistake, nu are all these fractions corresponding to the fractional quantum Hall effect. If you use this wave function and the Hamiltonian, do the variational calculation, you will find m equal to 3. A more general analysis will show that many other values of m are also possible because they all minimize the total energy of the system. That includes electron-electron repulsion. So one way to write down this wave function is the following. Let's pull out a factor of zj minus zk. I've done really nothing in this. I wrote down that factor of m as m minus 1 times this. Now, this one, we already discussed that if you have j and k are indices that run till the total number of electrons. So zj and zk, they are really coordinates of the electrons. So depending on how many electrons you have that many coordinates, and that's what this index represents. So this factor, we've already discussed, has no wasted zeros, and this factor includes all Pauli correlations that must be there. So this is one way to write down a wave function that has no wasted zeros for a given number of electrons. So this factor will, so this is just a trivial Gaussian factor. This Van der Waals determinant corresponding to this term already includes all of the Pauli correlations. That means under exchange, this factor should behave trivially. That means if you exchange, you get a minus one here. That means minus one to the power m minus one. This should really be odd. This should really be plus one. Implies that m should really be odd. So you can think of this as e to the power I pi m minus 1. This should be e to the power I 2 pi times p. So what you will find is m should be 2p plus 1. So p is an integer, and now you can see that this m must be 1, 3, 5, 7, and so on. So these type of wave functions will actually, you can write them down to describe the ground state of all fractions with odd denominators. Any questions? Yes.
Just for curiosity, did we manage to observe Bledsoe at m equal to 5?
So I think, these are still very difficult experiments. I should start with that. And there are very few groups that have the ability to do such experiments. But I think there are some groups, there is at least one or two groups that report these plateaus. But in general, what you need is you need very strong magnetic fields. And there are very few places in the world that go up to fields of higher than 30 Tesla and so on. And what you also need is very clean two-dimensional electron gas. Later on, we see that no sample is perfectly clean. You will always have disorder. But you do need this disorder to be smaller than the cyclotron frequency. Only then you can observe these plateaus. Yes?
Do we have a confidence for this wave function if it only works for 1m?
So let's, for one third, we have concrete, this has one third has been measured many times, but other fractions also have been measured in many times. A lot of the data for quantum Hall effect is easier to do in others. So typically you will, you do these experiments with gallium arsenide and semiconductors, but you can also, you also observe fractional quantum Hall effect for graphene, where the magnetic fields you have to reach are not so large. So there are many fractions that have been observed. In fact, the graph that was given or that is actually a data, that's real experimental data. So all those fractions are observed in experiment. So in short, we do have faith in such wave functions, that these wave functions do indeed work. And I think Laughlin was given Nobel Prize in 97 or some late 90s for this. So there is concrete evidence that these states are good descriptions of these plateaus, and the variational calculation does indeed go in the right direction. Any other questions? Yes.
Just to clarify this analysis, does that work for, like, for example, two-thirds?
So for two-thirds, yes. So what two-thirds really means is you have basically, you can think of two-thirds as, next what we are going to do is talk about a theory of composite fermions. So two-thirds, you can also think of 1 minus 1 by 3 or it's a fractional, it's one-third fractional effect for holes. So there are many ways to map. So what I've written down is just general fractions, but you can map these other fractions to a somewhat similar type of theory that we have for one-third. So for one-third, it's very easy. It's the easiest fraction to explain, and that's what we did first. And then you can map a lot of other fractions to this wave function, to this theory. Any other questions? So tomorrow we will start with the theory of composite fermions, which is another way to look at this fractional quantum Hall state. And in general, we will construct some new particles, new effective particles, which will be bound states of electrons and flux quantums. And then using this theory of composite fermions, we can explain, we can map a lot of these fractional quantum Hall effect ground states to an integer quantum Hall state. And then we will try to show that in integer quantum Hall state, how we can explain those plateaus.